Today with Claire Byrne on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Sullis. Finish school and not sure what's next? Explore further education and training options at thisisfet.ie.
The witness protection system has been back in the news this week, and while people might have their own ideas or assumptions about what it involves and what life under witness protection could be like, the reality probably doesn't reflect it. Well, Conor Gallagher is the Irish Times crime correspondent, and he's been looking into the background of witness protection today. Good morning, Conor.
Morning, Claire.
So to go right back, when did witness protection first start?
Witness protection goes back 25 years, so to 1997. It was one of a raft of criminal justice measures introduced after the murder of journalist Veronica Guerin. So things like the expansion of the Special Criminal Court, the Criminal Assets Bureau, and the establishment of the Witness Security Programme, as it's known in Ireland, under the auspices of the Attorney General, but run by the Garda Crime and or Security and Intelligence Branch.
Okay, and they do the actual protection of the witness.
That's right. So they run the operational side of it. So it's a subunit within that branch called the Witness Protection Unit, and that consists of senior officers and also the Special Detective Unit, which kind of do the actual protecting. So you'll have people in there who are responsible for liaison with other services, responsible for logistics, and then you'll have another unit responsible for risk assessment, and another part responsible for actually, you know, an arms aspect responsible for protecting witnesses in this country anyway.
So once someone is deemed appropriate for witness protection, what are the practical things that have to be arranged for them?
So there's different levels. You know, at the lowest level, you can be in witness protection in Ireland. So they might move you home. They might move you out west if you're in Dublin. They might put a guard outside your home 24 hours a day, or have a guard drive by your home every so often, that sort of thing. And then on the other end of it, you're fully relocated in another country. You can never come home, or probably can't come home for many years, and only in secret. And in that situation, the guards will liaise with foreign police forces. So it'll typically be an English-speaking country, just for the sake of that person being able to fit in and make a new life for themselves there easily. The guards will have relationships with police forces in those countries. They will set you up with a job, a place to live, maybe a training course, a car, that sort of thing.
And it sounds, Conor, when you say that, you know, they'll set you up with those things, that it could be quite a nice life. That's what it sounds like on the surface. But that's not the case, is it?
No, generally speaking, it's not. So one of the principles of the Witness Protection Programme is the like-for-like principle. So that basically says that they will set you up with the standard of living you're used to in Ireland. So if you're on social welfare in Ireland, you can expect to be on a similar standard of living in wherever you're being sent to. Now, they will pay for things, and each program is tailor-made, but so they might pay for things like for you to do a training course to reskill, you know, something like that. If you have addiction issues, they might put you in rehab. They might pay for a therapist if you have psychological issues. They might pay for driving lessons, that sort of thing. But the idea is to get you on your feet and actually get you out of the program, or out of the financial support aspect of the program, as soon as possible. So they really try to avoid big lump sums, anything like that. And the reason why that's important is they have to avoid the impression that they're giving you a financial reward for your evidence, because mm-hmm. the courts have said that you can't do that. You know, you can't pay people to give evidence.
But they also have to make it attractive in some way so that people will be keen to use it if they have valuable evidence.
Yeah, well, attractive might even be the wrong word, because, you know, the way it was described to me this week, you know, while doing a bit of research, was, you know, it's not a good life. It's a pretty horrendous life. One person with knowledge of the program said to me he wouldn't wish it on his worst enemy. And another described, you know, a situation where a handler was going to visit a witness in a different country, and they went to check in their fridge, and the only thing in the fridge was a stick of butter, you know. And so people have really tough lives in this program.
Just to focus a little bit on the protection side of this, I mean, there must be incredible pressure on the system to protect the people who accept involvement, not just for their sake, but for that whole system to continue working in the future, because nobody would go into it, Conor, if they thought there was any risk to them.
That's right. People I spoke to about the program kept talking about the integrity of the program, so the need to protect the integrity of the program. So there's obviously a need to protect individuals in the program. You know, there's a moral requirement there and the rest of it. But aside from that, if the security is breached in the program, you know, and someone's forced to relocate, or in worst case scenario, someone comes to some harm, the whole integrity of the program is damaged. So as you say there, the next person with valuable testimony that they want to give would think twice about going into the program if they couldn't be assured of their security. So the guards are really, really protective of the whole thing, very secretive of the whole thing. And that's to protect the individuals, but also to protect the program in general, to protect its integrity. And they're very proud of the fact that there's never been a breach as long as people have stuck by the rules, so stuck by the agreement they entered into when they first entered the program.
Is it used much?
So that's a really good question. It's kind of hard to say. So if we look back through the court records, say since 1997, we can see it's been, less than say 20 cases where it's been implemented. But there could be more, because some people might go into the program but might never end up giving evidence against someone. That could be for various reasons. You know, the accused in the trial could die, they could plead guilty, various other logistical reasons. So the actual number could be more than 20. Probably not that much more than 20. We can get some guide, a very, very rough guide, by looking at the expenditure of the program. That expenditure has gone up a huge amount in the last couple of years. It was 120,000 a year in 2019. It's 1.2 million in the last 2 years. But again, that doesn't necessarily mean we've had a load more people coming into the program. It could just be someone had to be relocated and it was particularly expensive. And we also know they revamped the protocols in the program in 2019. So it could be related to that. But it costs about 1.2 million a year these days.
And what about it happening in reverse? Like, have people come to Ireland under the witness protection program from elsewhere?
Yeah, absolutely. So the way these arrangements work is they're semi-formal arrangements between security services in different countries. So, you know, the guards might ask an American police force to accommodate someone in witness protection and offer, you know, protection to them there, and we would do the same. There's a quid pro quo, you know. So it's, you know, they're kind of semi-formal relationships and reciprocal relationships. You know, I don't know how many people have come to Ireland. I know that some people have been resettled in the UK, for example, but there was concern just about them in the UK. So the UK asked us to take them here. There's been a few cases like that, a few American cases. Presumably Canada, Australia, the other English-speaking countries also have relationships with the guards, but I can say that we have taken in people, all right.
And you mentioned the practical things that have to be put in place, like housing, like cars, like jobs. Does the state pay for everything?
So the state will, the host country will pay for those things generally, and the state, and then will recoup the costs from the state here. But the state will pay for, you know, your relocation costs. But once you get a job and everything, you're expected to stand on your own two feet. The whole idea is to get you out of the program. And when I say out of the program, I just mean out of the financial support part of the program, not out of the protection thing, the aspect which you'll probably be under for the rest of your life.
All right, Conor, it's very interesting. Thank you very much for telling us about it. Conor Gallagher there from the Irish Times.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.